I mentioned in a previous episode about Jephthah that when the Ammonites attacked Israel from the east, the Philistines attacked from the west. After the Ammonites ruled over Israel for 18 years, God used Jephthah to conquer the Ammonites. But the Philistines oppressed Israel for 40 years until God raised up the last judge of Israel, Samson. Now, this story should be familiar to most of you, but I thought I would retell it by emphasizing key aspects of the story and highlighting some cultural insights. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. The Philistines became the principal enemy of Israel during the years 1200 BC to 1000 BC, until around the time of David. They settled on the southern coast of Palestine, where they established their five capital cities of Ekron, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gaza, and Gath. The Philistines had a military advantage over Israel because they could make iron weapons. And they oppressed Israel for 40 years until God raised up a judge. There was a man named Manoah from the tribe of Dan. He and his wife lived in Zorah. The city was on the border of Judah and Dan, about 15 miles west of Jerusalem. It was on the crest of a hill overlooking the valley of Sorek. Manoah's wife was barren. And then one day the angel of the Lord appeared to her and told her that she would conceive and bear a son. He warned her not to drink wine or strong drink and not to eat any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. This was going to be a special child who would grow up and save Israel. The fact that Manoah's wife experienced barrenness and now she would be having a child, which was foretold by the angel of the Lord, brings an emphasis to the supernatural aspect of Samson's life and career. The woman told her husband about the experience. She called the visitor a man of God with the countenance of an angel of God. Typically, the expression man of God was used to refer to a prophet or someone who spoke directly with God, such as Moses. So she may have thought that she was talking to some type of prophet. Then Manoah prayed to God and asked him to send the man again so the man could teach them what to do with the child after he was born. God hearkened to the earnest prayer of Manoah, and the angel of the Lord came again. The angel appeared to Samson's mother and gave her further information. Interestingly, even though Samson would be a Nazarite with certain guidelines to follow, his mother was to begin the restrictions now, even before he'd been conceived, and even while he was in the womb. What a great argument against abortion! Before the child's conception and birth, the child's destiny was determined by God, and the mother even had guidelines to follow for her unborn child. If you want to know the details about the Nazarite vow, see Numbers chapter 6. It explains about what the person had to abstain from, including no razor touching his head. The reason for the restrictions is that all the days of his separation, he was to be holy to the Lord. And then when the time of separation was complete, there was a process to be followed, which involved offering gifts to God. What was so unique about Samson is that the period of separation and abstinence from certain things wasn't just for a period of days or weeks, but it was for his entire lifetime. After confirming the instructions for the wife to follow, Manoah wanted the visitor to wait while they prepared a goat for a meal. Hospitality custom required that all strangers who approached a dwelling were to be offered the opportunity to rest, refresh themselves, and eat a meal. The inclusion of fresh meat was considered generous because that was not usually included in their daily diet. And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, though thou detain me, I will not eat of thy bread. And if thou wilt offer a burnt offering, thou must offer it unto the Lord. For Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, What is thy name, that when thy sayings come to pass, we may do thee honor? And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is secret? So Manoah took a kid with a meat offering and offered it on a rock to God. By placing the food on a rock, it changed from being a meal to a sacrifice that needed to be consumed by fire. Rocks were sometimes used as altars because the blood could drain from the slaughtered animal, and the rock would be safe for fire. When the flame went up from Manoah's offering on the rock toward heaven, the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame. Then Manoah and his wife fell to the ground, knowing that he was the angel of the Lord, and they were afraid that they were going to die. Manoah said, We shall surely die because we have seen God. Now let's pause here for a few quick side notes. First, the exact identity of the angel of the Lord or the angel of God is not given in the Bible, and it is a topic of much debate. There are times when the angel speaks as God, identifies himself with God, and exercises the responsibilities of God. So many believe that the angel of the Lord is probably a theophany, an appearance of God in physical form. Second, there is a concept in the Bible that seeing God is kind of taboo because the fullness of his glory is beyond what any mortal can tolerate. In Exodus, God told Moses that if any man saw him face to face in all his glory, then they would die. This would explain why Manoah was afraid that he and his wife were going to die because they had seen God. Third, some people complain that the story of Samson is evidence that the Bible views women as unimportant. Samson's father, Manoah, is named 18 times, but his mother's actual name isn't even mentioned once. But the reason that male names are mentioned and sometimes female names are not is that lineage in ancient Israel was established through the male side of the family, not the female side. So it's common for lists of descendants in the Old Testament to only include the males. But we know that Samson's mom played a pivotal role in this story because the Bible says that she was barren. There is a theme in the Bible about a barren wife, and that typically occurs when something special is going to happen. Through the Lord's intervention, the woman bears a son who plays a significant role in the history of the people of God, such as Sarah, Hannah, and Elizabeth. And it was to Samson's mother that the angel of the Lord appeared twice before finally meeting her husband. And finally, after meeting the angel of the Lord, Manoah was the one who thought that they would die because they had seen God. But his wife reassured him using good critical thinking skills. So the Bible depicts her as being a very reasonable woman. Eventually, the woman bore a son whom she named Samson. As he grew, the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times. Judges 14 provides the next chapter of Samson's life. Samson saw a woman in Timnath, also known as Timnah, and told his parents that he wanted her for a wife. This was an issue for two reasons. First, it was typical for parents to arrange marriages, which were not so much about romance, but clan partnerships, especially in Israel, where land holdings were tied to tribe affiliation. And the arrangements were usually determined by the head of the family. Second, the parents were obviously disappointed because rather than wanting someone from their own people, Samson wanted to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines. Samson's whole life from the womb until his death were to be dedicated to the Lord, and he was to be holy unto the Lord. And yet he was desiring a wife outside of the covenant people. The Bible says that the parents didn't realize that this was of the Lord. Now, there are various opinions about what exactly this phrase means, that this was of the Lord. Did God cause Samson to want a Philistine wife? It's possible. But remember that God gives people free choice. It's more likely that Samson was set on marrying an unbeliever outside of God's people, and God used Samson's own desires to accomplish his purposes against the Philistines. This marriage was the beginning of the process to overthrow the Philistines who had dominion over Israel. On a trip to Timnath, a young lion came against Samson. The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon Samson, and he rent the lion. His physical strength was not his own, but it was the result of the Spirit of the Lord coming upon him. For other judges, the Spirit of the Lord endowed them with authority to accomplish tasks, such as being able to raise an army and overthrow an oppressor. But in Samson's situation, it wasn't so much about authority. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mainly for his physical ability when he was attacking or being attacked. Once the proclamation of espousal had been formally made, the second stage of the marriage process was a wedding feast, which Samson offered. The highlight of the traditional 7-day feast was the consummation of the marriage, which could occur any time after the first day of the feast, usually on the first night. There were 30 male companions provided for Samson, and they came from the clan or village of the bride. Samson gave them a riddle as a wager that they had to solve before the 7-day feast came to an end. Since the riddle was based on the episode with the honey in the carcass of the lion he had killed that only Samson knew about, the companions could not guess the riddle. So they threatened Samson's wife with burning her and all of her father's house. She eventually enticed the answer from Samson and told it to the Philistine men. The men correctly answered the riddle by offering one of their own to Samson. What is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? Samson knew the answer to their riddle. It was a woman's enticement. And it's interesting that his downfall later would be from another woman's enticement. Samson answered the men, "If ye had not plowed with my heifer, ye had not found out my riddle." And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and slew 30 men of them and took their spoil and gave change of garments unto them which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. This was actually not that unusual. If a wife was deserted, as the family had assumed, then it was customary to find someone else to support her. But Samson was unaware that his wife had been given to another man. So in the time of wheat harvest, which would have been in May in that part of the country, he went to visit his wife and took a young goat as a gift. Now, although a marriage was usually consummated on the first night of the feast, often the bride did not actually go to live with the bridegroom for several months until everything was ready for the move. During that time, the bride would continue to stay at her father's house, and the husband would regularly visit and bring a gift. So this would have been a normal process. But when Samson arrived, his father-in-law stopped him and explained that he had given his daughter away to someone else because he thought that Samson utterly hated her. He offered his younger daughter instead. But Samson responded by using 300 foxes to burn up the standing corn and the vineyards and olives of the Philistines. On a side note, it's possible that the Hebrew word translated as foxes could also refer to jackals. Both animals were native to this area. And whereas foxes hunt alone, jackals hunt in packs. So it would have actually been more practical for Samson to trap jackals because whole packs could be captured at one time. The Philistines responded to this destruction of their crops by burning Samson's wife and her father. In return, Samson slaughtered a great many Philistines. Samson's motivation for all of these actions was not to righteously rescue Israel from oppression by the Philistines, but he was motivated by personal revenge. Again, in this instance, God wasn't making him do it or even condoning it, but God used Samson's own choices to accomplish his purposes against the Philistines. So the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah in order to get Samson. When the men of Judah found out what the Philistines wanted, 3,000 of them came to bind Samson and deliver him to the Philistines. But when he was given over to the Philistines, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and the new cords upon his arms became as flax burned with fire, and his bands were loosed from off his hands. Then he slayed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass. Weakened and dehydrated from the battle, God made water come out of the hollow place in the jawbone, and Samson drank and was revived. In the next chapter of Samson's life, he was again led by his fleshly desires. He went to Gaza and met a harlot. The people of the city hoped to catch him and kill him in the morning, so they laid in wait all night in the gate of the city. But Samson arose at midnight and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and the bar and all, and carried them away on his shoulders to the top of a hill. Then he fell in love with a woman named Delilah. Now, I'm sure that you know the story of Delilah and Samson, and it's familiar to you. The five lords of the Philistines, the ones who ruled the five main Philistine cities, bribed Delilah with an offer of 1,100 shekels of silver each to find out the source of Samson's strength. That would be a total of 5,500 shekels. This was a good amount of money, considering that the standard annual wage of a laborer was 10 shekels. Tracts of land cost 400 to 600 shekels. The size of the bribe shows the importance placed on capturing Samson. The fact that the Philistines believed that there was a secret to his strength that they could discover shows that they considered his strength to be supernatural or maybe even magical. Samson played into this by offering Delilah superstitious ideas for how to bind him. Kind of like the idea that a silver bullet can kill a werewolf. In ancient traditions, there were beliefs that certain materials had magical properties. Samson told Delilah on three occasions that his strength could be compromised by green withes, new ropes, and weaving the locks of his head with the web of a loom. But each time, Samson was able to escape from the men who tried to bind him. Finally, Delilah pressed him so much that his soul was vexed unto death. So he told her all his heart and explained that a razor had never come on his head, because he had been a Nazarite unto God from his mother's womb. If his head was shaven, his strength would be taken away. I want to briefly mention here that the Apostle Paul made it clear that it was a shame for a man to have long hair, but the Nazarite vow was a special act of devotion to God. This vow was unique because the dedicated hair was uncut. And it was actually more typical in ancient Near Eastern cultures to shave the head or cut hair in fulfillment of a vow, possibly made to a false god, or even to use cut hair in divination. And this is because in ancient thinking, hair, along with blood, was one of the main representatives of a person's life essence. In the case of the Nazarite vow, unlike the other cultures that would shave or cut the hair, the hair was to be kept uncut as a sign of the vow. So while Samson slept, Delilah had a man come and shave his head. The shaving of Samson's hair brought his vow to an end. When he awoke, he tried to defend himself against his attackers as usual, but he was not aware that the Lord had departed from him. So the Philistines took him, put out his eyes, brought him down to Gaza, bound him with brass fetters, and made him grind in the prison house. Some people believe that his strength was literally in his hair, so when it was removed, his power left too. But it's more accurate to think of his hair as being an external sign of his Nazirite vow. His strength wasn't literally in his hair. It was in his dedication to God, of which the hair was a symbol. His hair was just a sign, but he had come to rely on it. And how tragic was it that Samson wasn't even aware when the Lord had departed from him? Now, we may think of Samson slaving away on a large rotary mill that was usually powered by donkeys or slave labor. But at the time of Samson, hand mills were still used. Grinding houses would have rooms containing multiple hand mills, and the grain would be ground by prisoners of war, criminals, and people who had defaulted on their debts. In fact, there's an archaeological discovery that shows a room that had places for 16 hand mills in one large room. So it would have been arduous work done while blind and in prison. And at the end of Samson's story, as a blind slave in a prison grinding grain all day, the lords of the Philistines wanted to make sport with him at the temple, where they were meeting to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god. Samson prayed one final time to God to be avenged for his two eyes, and God in his mercy gave him the supernatural strength to make the place collapse. Samson and about 3,000 men and women were crushed. It was the end of his 20-year rule as judge. In his death, he had killed more than he slew in his lifetime. And then his brethren and all the house of his father took his body and buried him in the burying place of his father Manoah. Now, Samson must have been a man of faith. He is mentioned in passing in the Bible's Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11. But more than faith, unfortunately, he was a man of the flesh. Samson had been given supernatural physical strength, but he had lacked control over his passions. It's disappointing that Samson's life was supposed to be holy unto the Lord, but he never really showed moral character or a burden for God's people or even a passion for God beyond maintaining his Nazirite vow. With the Philistine wife and the harlot and with Delilah, Samson was motivated by his own desires instead of being concerned about pleasing God. He could be hateful and vindictive. He didn't try to overthrow the Philistines, even though they oppressed the Israelites. He didn't even really try to resist the Philistines. He sought a wife from among them and feasted with them. He only attacked when they did something to him. The Bible nowhere implies that God condoned these actions. But Samson was in a covenant relationship with God based on his Nazirite vow. So despite Samson's failures and sins, God used him to accomplish his purposes against the Philistines. God can use even flawed people to accomplish his will. But Samson still had to live with the consequences of his foolishness and his sin. He squandered his covenant with God, costing him the source of his strength, his sight, his freedom, and ultimately his life. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.